Welcome to Man Strong Podcast. This is your host, Clint Locklear, and I want to talk just about really two main topics today. One of them is why leaders have to be men. And if you're a girl and you're going, you're just being chauvinist, just keep that in your pants right now. Men like. How about that? And then I want to talk a little bit about shoulder stability, because a lot of guys, when they get older, they have shoulder issues. You can correct a lot of that, and it's not hard. And then sometimes less can be more. And I've learned this over the last couple of months, and I've actually been quite surprised. So before we get to that, I want to thank our sponsor, which is Funky Trap Tags and Supplies. They have a full line of trapping supply equipment. They have copper trap tags, which I use on fishing traps and trout lines and noodles. I've had people make necklaces out of them for rock bands. You can use these things for a lot of different things. If you get creative, you can make gifts out of them. You can do a lot of cool things with them, auction them off, whatever. So keep that in mind. He also has a lot of fishing stuff. He's got hunting stuff. He's got a tremendous predator call that he sells, and stuff for deer and hogs and everything else. So if you're an outdoorsman, you need to check out Funky Trap Tags and Supplies. So why is it important for leaders to be real men? We can see that right now. And every time you look at the news right now, you can see the difference between a real man and a beta male that wants to be a man. And I'm referring to Trump and Biden. It's a real world situation that we can see real world consequences from. Now, most of us know by now, this is Friday. In the last not that many hours ago, there was two bombs that went off at Kabul and Afghanistan. Killed, I'm seeing different numbers, between 11 and 13 Marines, civilians, children. It's a bad deal. I mean, there's no good deals about bombing. But see, the difference is, we used to have a man for a president, and we no longer have a man for a president. Now, what I'm getting ready to say, like I said, if you're a female and you want to be in a leadership role, whatever that is, you're going to have to be a man too. Leadership is not necessarily a gender role, even though a lot of feminists say that it always is. That's not true. I've met some tremendous leaders in the military that were female. I'm sure there's some people that you know that being female has nothing to do with their leadership ability. So it's not a gender thing. But I think we all know what we mean when you need to be a man. And leadership needs to be a man. See, for the last 18 months, no service members in Afghanistan have been killed. That's hard to imagine, but seems to be the case. I've seen this over and over again from many different sources. And why has the Taliban and ISIS not tried to kill the military? Now, the military still goes out and does some snatch and grabs, and they still do some things the Taliban and ISIS doesn't like. But ISIS and Taliban has made a conscious decision not to try to kill American service members. Because a man got on the phone with the leadership of those two organizations and said, "Listen up, peckerheads. If you kill any of my service members while we're drawing down, I'm not going to come after your soldiers. I'm going to come after you. And I will kill every last one of you." That's what Trump said. The reason that they obeyed Trump, terrorists obeyed Trump, is because they knew he would do it. He's a strong leader. If he says he's going to do it, he's going to do it. He stood his ground. They know he is. Now, there's all, you know, you see this stuff about he's got a twitchy eye and he could be crazy and you don't know what he's going to do. Yeah, all of that plays into the hand of a leader. Because sometimes a leader has to say things that you're not really sure if it's going to happen or not, but you know the character of that leader well enough to know, yeah, he would definitely try that. So the Taliban, terrorist, when they knew they were talking to an actual alpha male, which Trump is, they knew not to jack with him. Because he's already, over the course of the last few years, pretty much wiped them out whenever he wanted to. He sent bombs through the roof of cars on airports for military generals that were helping them. They know the man knows what he says. Now, let's look at the beta side, Biden. Biden, I'll be honest with you guys, I get very infuriated with Biden. And at the same time, I feel kind of bad for Biden. He should not be president, not because of his policies, not because he's a Democrat, not because he's a liberal, and not because he's just a swamp monster that all he does is enrich himself and his family by his influence, which he does. He's a dementia patient. Now, if you've ever been around or had relatives when they get really on up in age and they start losing their mind, you know they don't know what's going on. You know when they say stuff, it could be something they saw on TV and they think it's real. It could be, you just don't know. But you know you can still love them and care for them, but they're not exactly in reality a lot of times. And that's where Biden's at. He's been, there was a video I just saw. Someone bought a sign, put it on the side of the road, and it said, Biden was put into leadership like a toilet's put into place. And that's exactly what happened with him. I don't think anybody that's going to be honest and not play political games can realize he was not the most popular president in American history. But the difference between a leader and a non-leader is because Biden has been a swamp monster all these years, and everybody knows that you can bribe him, and you can bribe his family, and he's going to do things that's going to, that you know, enrich himself over his country, where Trump was the complete opposite. And they know he does not have the backbone nor the mental ability to do anything. Why would you listen to him? See, there's all kind of, quote, leaders in this world. I see them on school board meetings. I see them at planning commissions. I see them as governors, policemen sometimes. They're not real men. They're afraid of confrontation, and they will avoid confrontation at all costs, the way a beta male would. Now, they may bluster, and they may talk, and they may backstab like a girl, but you know they're not going to come face to face with you. And anybody that knows anything about Biden knows he's all air. Has always been air. So when the Taliban is told by President Biden that if there's going to be, like I think he said, something in fury, if you mess with our military as we get out of there, it's going to be swift and all this, you know, all this blustering he did, I'm sure they sat around slapping their legs and laughing. Because they know he didn't mean it. His own press secretary said about China taking over Taiwan that we will speak out about it. China don't give a damn if you speak out of them going to take over Taiwan. They could care less. They want Taiwan. And now they got a guy in office that's going to let them take it. For one, they own him. Now China is going to get all the lithium reserves that's in Afghanistan because of Biden, which they paid off several times before, and other members of his family. And it's not just Biden, Mitch McConnell, Republican, and a host of other politicians. But if you're going to be in a leadership role and you're going to be a beta male, don't expect things to work out very well for you, because they're not. You can't pretend to be a male. You have to think like a male. You have to have the emotions of a male. You have to have the aggressiveness of a male. You have to be an actual male. I was listening to a podcast with Tucker from Fox News. He's got a pretty interesting theory. He thinks the reason all the women today are always so mad is because men aren't being men and they're showing weakness all the time. And I think he's probably true. It disrupts the natural order of things. So women have to be more aggressive to get stuff done. That's not in their nature, because they're more into people than the things, where men are more into things than into people. And the roles are reversing, and I'm sure down deep in the core of women with weak men, it infuriates them and it disgusts them. And they're mad. I think he's got a point. Well, now we've got a leader of this country that's weak. He's not a man. I don't believe he's ever been a man. He's just been a politician, figuring out how to make more money and say the right things when he has to say the right things. So today we can see this with our own eyes. Trump said you do it, there's going to be a hellacious price. They didn't do it. Biden says if you do it, they pretty much go, yeah, right, whatever, dude. We're going to see this in the coming months up with China and Russia. They're going to start doing things they would have never done under Trump, but they're going to do it under Biden, not because he's a Democrat, because he's not a real alpha male, and alpha males do not respect beta males. Not when it comes to action. Now, leadership is one of those things that we hear a lot of. See, I'm going to tell you the difference between another leader and, quote, leaders. The main general over the Marines came out public and said, we are not going to force mandate these experimental drugs on our Marines. Not going to happen. Now, before anybody goes, well, he's an anti-vaxxer. Are you nuts? That's like calling me an anti-vaxxer. I got more vaccines into me from the military than anybody in civilian life will ever have. That Marine general and his Marines are vaccinated up to their earlobes. Because when you go to different countries and different continents and you have all this other stuff going on, you get shots on top of shots on top of shots. But an experimental vaccine? The man, because he is a man, said not to my guys. See, that's a leader. And I guarantee you he's being threatened to be retired. He's threatened to be lost his pension. He's probably being threatened in ways that we cannot even imagine. And still, no, you're not vaccinating my men, because he is a leader. He's a real alpha male. Now, this may come as a surprise to a lot of you, and I don't know exactly the structure in other military groups. I was Army. For 1 year, I was at Division Headquarters in Fairbanks, Alaska for the 6th Infantry Division. And I learned a huge lesson about the military. Once you get out of a captain, as an officer, you now go into politics. If you make any waves, you'll get a mark on your record and you will be retired. So all of these soldiers that were company commanders, combat vets, everything like that, they know once they're a major, they got to play the game if they want to stay in. So if a major wants to be a colonel or a light colonel or try to make it to general, anything like that, it's a game at that point, and the game is politics. I'm not sure, but if I was a guessing man, I would say that most military branches are that way. Real men have a hard time staying and playing the game. Because if you know something is right or wrong, you're going to stand for it. But if that's not the game, you're going to get clubbed over the head for it. And you're going to get dismissed. But the Army generals, the Air Force generals, the Navy general, the Coast Guard general. Generals in the military do not have the manhood to stand up to their commander-in-chief. And as someone that's an Army veteran, that saddened me to say, the Army was more important about being woke than it was being soldiers. More important, they were worried about, did you vote for Trump? Are you a white supremacist? Are you a terrorist in hiding? We got to do classes to tell you how bad you are as a white person. That's what the Army was doing. Marine General was like, nah, not playing those games, and you're not giving our guys an experimental vaccine. And I'm not going to get into the vaccine, but I want to say something that you're going to probably find confusing unless you do your own research. This week, and I think it was Monday, Pfizer's vaccine has been approved by the FDA. That's what the news is telling you. That's what the Biden administration is telling you. That's what Facebook is telling you, and Google is telling you, and Twitter is telling you. That's what all the media outlets are telling you. That's what social media is telling you. It's a lie. The Pfizer vaccine that you'll go get tomorrow is not FDA approved. You can go on the FDA website, which I've done, and you can go through that, and you will find out about three pages in that the Pfizer vaccine that they're still giving out is still under. All they did was redo the experimental emergency vaccine. The one that you take now, you'll take in 6 months, and you'll take next year. What they did do is approve a virus that won't be out for 2 years by Pfizer, that you not even being made or in production yet. Let that sink in. They played word games to get people to believe that the vaccine that they're taking tomorrow, and they took a month ago, is now FDA approved. Go look it up. It's on the FDA's website. And this Marine General, he knows that. There's going to be consequences to this Marine General for standing up to the commander-in-chief. But you know what real men do? They take the consequences because they do what's right. They're not wusses. Beta boys always give in because they're wusses. And I don't want to use that word because the one I'm referring to starts with a P. You stand your ground as a man. And if you're not willing to do that, don't call yourself a man. You're not going to be swayed like a child. See, most men can easily be convinced to change a concrete stance that they have with a little bit of peer pressure. They're not real men. Right now, you're seeing in the news, the new black versus white, the new rich versus poor, the new North versus South, the new Republican versus Democrat is vaccine and unvaccinated. I haven't taken the vaccine. I've got most of my friends have taken the vaccine. I don't hold them in any negative disregard for taking the vaccine. People need to do what they think is best for them at the time. I've done some research in what these vaccines are, and I've looked at past studies, and I've made some conclusions as not a doctor that goes, I think I'm going to wait a little while before I take the vaccine. Now, when I get around friends, not all of them, some of them, I get told, you just need to take the vaccine. You just need to take the vaccine. I watch the news. You're murdering people if you don't take the vaccine. Social media. You're a murderer if you don't take the vaccine. You're being selfish. You're being this. Listen. I have been part of a scientific study in the military. I was given nerve agent when I went to the Middle East. The guys that continue to take it, they were screwed up for life. So I have a little bit of hesitancy to believe that the government is here to help. When I look at the animal studies that these vaccines could never get out of animal trials because we're seeing exactly what we're seeing now in Israel, in Spain, in Iceland, and in Europe, the same thing happened in the animal trials. It's happening in real life. And it's not looking good for people that got vaccinated. Not all of them, but a good percentage of them. And me personally, I'm like, I think I'm going to wait this out a little bit. All the pressure from everything is telling me to take the vaccine. I'll take the vaccine when I'm good and ready to take the vaccine. Or I'll take more of a standard type vaccine. Or I'm going to at least wait some time until I can see what happens over more than 6 months. And I know when people talk about the science, it's a marketing ploy now. It's not really about science. Because there is a crap ton of doctors and nurses and scientists that are screaming from the rooftops, this is probably not a good idea to do on mass scale. So, I have decided not to, for my own personal thought process, to not doing it. Am I saying you shouldn't take it? No. You should do what is best for you with the information that you have. But I'm going to stand my ground on this till I decide that it's okay to not stand my ground on this. It's not political. It's not because Biden's in office. It's not because Democrats are pushing it. It's not because I'm trying to be spiteful and talking about my freedoms and all that. No, I've just decided that I want to wait a little while. So because now I've got a plan B. I can take it or I cannot take it. If I take it, there is no plan B. So I'm going to stand my ground on that. People want you to do things that aren't ethical in your business. Are you going to stand the ground or are you going to give in? Stealing from companies, which is one of the biggest reasons companies end up going out of business, stand your ground. Relationships, do you stand your ground when you said you were going to do certain things? Are you easily talked out of it? I'm going to say a very old-fashioned thing. Men are the leaderships of the home. I think that's just the way it is. My wife makes all kinds of decisions every day, and I don't care. But we talk about stuff. A lot of times it's between the two. And a lot of times we disagree, and that's fine. But if I truly believe it, she knows I'm going to stand there and I'm going to dig in and it's not going to change. You have to stand your ground as a man. If you thought about what it is that you're doing. See, I don't think a lot of people have thought about a lot of things that they do or don't do. It's just a knee-jerk reaction. it follows the trend. It follows the herd. It's what is popular at the time. That's a little bit more for beta males than it is real males. But you want to see the big difference of dealing with alpha males and beta males? Dead Marines right now. In coffins. Because we got a beta male pretending to be a leader, which he is not. He may have the role of a leader, but he is not a leader. I don't know who the leader is up there. I don't know who's exactly pulling the strings, but it's not a dementia patient. Now I want to totally switch gears, guys. Get something that's a little more happy thoughts. When I was in the ninth grade, I was playing football. I played defensive end. And I remember in a scrimmage game we had before the season started, I was starting at defensive end as a freshman. And the part of the defensive end's role, what their main goal is on the field, is to secure the corner. And what that means, if you're on the outside of the tackle and you're a defensive end, you need to get the running back or the quarterback or whatever to not be able to go around you because you have all the open fields. You need to turn them back in to your other teammates. So you hold the edge. And we're playing hot, muggy Tennessee day. This was back in the day when all our uniforms, you know, had them great big old holes in them. Everybody's did. They weren't the same looking uniforms as we have today. And I remember I get off the block. I see they're doing a reverse to my side, which the way a reverse works, you know, quarterback hands it off to a tailback normally, and then you have a wide receiver coming from the other side, and he hands it off to him. And his goal is to get outside of the line so he can get on the edge and run down the side of the field. Well, the defensive end, me, my job was to keep him contained. And as soon as I saw what was going on, I took off like a banshee, and I could tell that that wide receiver has not noticed me coming at him at full speed. I decide I'm going to take that boy into the middle of next year, and I'm going to run flat through him because he's not even prepared. Right before I lay the wood to him, he catches the movement out of the corner of his eye, and he jumps straight back. All his momentum's coming towards me, all of my momentum's going through him, and he jumps back about 2.5 feet. And I realize I'm not going to be able to hit him with shoulder pads, so I reach out with my left arm and I grab his jersey. When I do, I squeeze my fingers. Those big holes in those uniforms we used to wear, they get tangled up in the fingers. The only thing connecting him and me is my shoulder joint, and it comes out, and when it comes back in, it's about at my nipple height on the side of my arm. Not a good day. So, all through the rest of my sports career in high school, I had shoulder issues. It was very unstable. In the military, I had it come out jumping out of airplanes and doing different things. Very unstable. I've had it come out trapping. I've had it come out hunting. I've had it come out shooting a bow. Very unstable. And this went on from ninth grade till about I was 49 years old. I just thought that's the way it was. That's what's my rest of my life is going to be, is protecting this very weak shoulder. There's nothing, and I've talked to doctors, there's nothing I could do about it except get surgery. And the surgeries, they were saying, still can have problems with it. Well, not because of my shoulder, but as you know, I started lifting weights when I was 49 years old. And I played around with them in high school, the way all football players do. We goofed around with them in the Army, trying to get biceps and chest. But I never really got into training until I was 49 years old. My shoulder today is stronger than it was before it came out of socket. I don't have to baby it. I don't have to think about it. I can sleep on it. I can pick things up with it. I don't know if it will come out of socket any easier than the shoulder that's never come out of socket. I cannot tell a difference today at 52 years old with training that thing. How did I do it? Well, I got the muscles around it stronger. And I also took time to work on the stabilizing muscles of the shoulder. Now, if you've got an injury, knee, back, shoulder, elbow, wrist, neck, you should be listening to what I'm saying. When you build those up, the stabilizer muscles and the bigger muscles that you like you see if someone takes your shirt off, everything gets stronger. What does the logical, or I should say, the illogical medical profession when it comes to this stuff tell you? Take it easy, protect it, don't do anything crazy, don't lift weights with it, you know, you got to protect it. It gets weaker and weaker and weaker, and it comes out easier and easier and easier. Now, I'm going to tell you a couple of ways to tighten up your shoulders. They're not hard. It may not be something you're going to want to do if a bunch of buddies are all lifting weights around you because it looks kind of goofy. But it's not that complicated. So, and you can do things for your knees, your back, your elbows. All kind of things you can do, and once you get into training, you kind of figure this out, and you find out other information. So if you've got problems as you get older, there's probably a solution for it besides that's just the way that it is. So for your shoulder, first thing I do, and I still do this every week, and I worked up to a 60-pound kettlebell, but you can use 40, 30, 20, 15, 5. Whatever it is you can do. I want you to bend over with your hands. I do with both shoulders, one at a time. And I want you to grab the kettlebell around the handle. If you don't know what a kettlebell is, it looks like a big cannonball with a handle welded on it. Dumbbells will not work the same as this. You're going to bend over. You're going to grab it by the handle, and you're going to bring your elbow up level with your shoulder with the kettlebell, still just grabbing the handle with the ball straight up, which means it's not stable. So you're going to have to fight it. And at first, you're just going to stand there and hold that in place. And you're going to shake, and that's okay. And then once you get that down to where you're not shaking, I want you to walk with that 20, 30 feet, walk back with your elbow straight out from your shoulder, your forearm straight up to the sky with a kettlebell held by the handle and the ball above the handle. Super simple, not easy. Even people with good shoulders have a hard time doing this because if you lift weights a lot, you don't really worry about your stabilizer muscles as much because you're worrying about your bigger muscles, your chest, your back, your front delt, side delt, back delt, stuff like that. But your shoulder is very complicated, just like knees, back, neck, elbows. The next thing you're going to want to do once you can walk with it is I want you to then raise it up over your head with your arms straight up in the air, by the handle with the ball above the handle, kind of like you're giving the Black Panther sign. And I want you to walk with it that way. It won't take but a couple of months and you'll see a huge difference. Now, the second way to really build stability in your shoulders, and if you're starting to lift weights, I highly recommend doing this at least once a week or once every 2 weeks, is I want you to get on a bench press. So you're laying on your back. Everybody knows what a bench press is, I'm sure. I want you to get a couple of bands, They don't have to be, you don't want them to be really strong bands because you want them to move. And then I want you to tie that around the bar on the end with no weight on the bar. And tie that around a kettlebell on each end, or a dumbbell, or just a plate of, you know, 25-pound plate, or whatever you can do with this, because you won't be able to do as much as you think. And you're going to have the bands between the weight that's just dangling below it, kind of like a set of balls, and then it's going to go up to the bar, and I want you to slowly bench press that. You can use PVC once you get used to the regular bar, but a regular bar, trust me, will kick your butt first time you do it. It's super unstable. Every movement you make gets transferred through the bar, through the bands, to those kettle bands, and they start swinging back and forth. All those stabilizer muscles in your shoulders have to fire for you to be able to do this movement with that unstable of a weight. A couple of sets of 10, and you're good. Trust me, all your little stabilizer muscles are going to be screaming. Now, you're not going to build a huge chest or shoulders or anything doing this, but what you're going to do is bulletproof your shoulders. If you got bad shoulders, that's important. And if you want to have bulletproof shoulders, that's important. Those three things, basically two, but the three things, if you'll follow that for 2 months, and you've got bad shoulders, you're probably going to forget that you had bad shoulders. I don't care how big your chest is, how big your back is, and how big your outside of your shoulder muscles are. If you want to have stability, you've got to train stability. Now, to close the show, I want to leave y'all with something that for me personally, in my type of mentality, it's hard for me to grasp. I can tell now that I have wasted a lot of energy and a lot of extra time in a gym that I didn't need to waste for the last 2.5 years. I was doing, you know, 4 sets of tricep exercises and 4 sets of 4 to 5 sets of shoulder exercises and regular bench and incline bench and some flies and some decline dumbbell pressing and stuff for chest. So I had all this stuff going. So for me to work like this chest and shoulders, it's a good hour and a half. And then I would do arms, and it'd be an hour and a half. And then I'd do my back, it'd be an hour and a half, 2 hours. Legs, hour and a half, 2 hours. In the middle of that, I'd throw in some ab and some network and some forearm work and stuff like that. I kept listening to, which I thoroughly enjoy, a podcast called The Real Bodybuilding Podcast, which you should never listen to with your children. If you listen to it, you'll know why. But this same thought process kept coming up with these guys. There were guys that were professional bodybuilders that these older bodybuilders said, "You're doing too much. If you did less, you would get bigger." Now see, when you think about this from someone that the more work you do, the better off you are mentality, you don't really listen to stuff like that. You don't. But I kept hearing this over and over and over and over again. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to come up with a plan that allows me to test this. So now what I've been doing is I still do 2 weeks of strength and 2 weeks of hypertrophy. But instead of having a day of chest and shoulders, arms, back, then legs, that's 5 days. Now what I do is I do a leg movement every day that I lift weights. It can be, so like for my schedule, like right now it's early. I'm in my lure shop. I'm getting ready to label a bunch of triple X. In between labeling and put them in totes and getting them on shelves and all that, I'm going to do sissy squats on a little board that lets my heel come up about 4 inches. I'm going to do 5 sets of sissy squat. And I'm going to after the first two sets that I get really warmed up, I start extending my knees way over my toes. Puts a tremendous amount of force on your quads. And I'm doing them slow and I'm doing them deep. That's all I'm going to do for legs today. Yesterday, I did box squats. I think yesterday I got up to about 375. Felt good and heavy until I got down to 5 reps. So I did 5 sets of those yesterday. I won't do any legs tomorrow or the next day because tomorrow is GPP, just general fitness, where I'll be pushing a 300-pound wheelbarrow around the yard while doing some other things like striking and kicking on the bags in between the wheelbarrow, just general fitness, and then I'm going to take a day off. So legs are 4 days a week, 5 exercises, or 5 sets per time. I'm not getting crazy sore. I'm actually seeing more growth now than I did when I was doing these killer workouts. So like if we start on a Monday, I'm doing everything push on Monday. In the morning, I do my legs, just 5 sets. Didn't take very long. When I work out in the afternoon, I'll do chest, 2 exercises, shoulders, 2 exercises, triceps, 2 exercises. I push those and a higher intensity than I was when I was doing 4. But I've cut the amount of sets down by half. I'm still eating 200 grams of protein. I still get 7 to 9 hours sleep a night. Only thing I've changed is I've cut the sets in half. So Monday would be push. Tuesday will be pull, which means back and biceps, rear delts, neck. Again, instead of doing, because I used to do like back exercises, I'd do 5, 6, 7 different varieties of pulling motions for my back, only do 2. I'll do a set of 6 on traps. I'll do 1 set or 2 sets on biceps at the most, where I'll work up to a weight, work down the weight again, like an up and down the rack type system. Yesterday when I did back, I just did cable curls, where I get on a cable machine and I step in front of it and I keep my elbows very steady, and I bring, only thing that moves is my forearm. I started at 40. I think I went to 110, I worked myself back down to 40. It was a high volume for biceps, but there was only 3 sets in there that was probably really, really intense. And I've been doing this for about 2 months now. So 2 days of lifting weights, 1 day of GPP, which actually puts on quite a bit of mass if you're doing wheelbarrows and sled pulls and stuff like that. Then I take a day off. Then it's push, pull, GPP, take a day off. So I'm like on an 8-day schedule here. I'm doing half the work. My strength is getting even better, and I can physically see the difference with hypertrophy or muscle size. So those old bodybuilders were telling the truth. Now, why am I bringing this up to you? Because depending on your personality, when you get into weightlifting, or some form of exercise, running, biking, whatever it is, and you really enjoy to do it like I enjoy weightlifting, you can really do way too much that you cannot recover from and get the growth and the endurance and all that that comes, strength that comes along with it, because you're keeping yourself broke down too much. It saves time. So now I'm doing in 1 hour session what it took, or 1 hour and a half session, what it took 3 hours to do. And I can physically see the difference of muscle. I can feel the difference in strength. So more is not always better. If you want to do more GPP. Walk. Sprint up a hill, push something, pick something up, walk with something. Get into boxing or MMA training or jiu-jitsu or whatever it is that you like to do, gardening. I mean, that's like the big gardening day that you got to do a bunch of stuff or plant trees or like I used to do. Do something that's GPP. If you want to really bump up your workout, do more GPP in less physical weight training, whether it be just pure strength or hypertrophy to build muscle, which are both important. If you'll do that for a couple of months, you are going to be able to tell, I bet, a huge difference. Now, if you're like a lot of people that go to the gym and they never really push themselves and they do the same thing week after week, you may not see that big a difference, because if you do really, you know, not very much work and now you're doing half of not very much work, you may not see the same difference. But you know in your heart, when you leave that gym, you're exhausted because you pushed hard. This may really help you out as far as your growth. And the reason I like it is because I know I'm only doing two chest movements. So 2 days ago, I worked up to 350 on bench, dropped it down to 275. I did four sets of six. Then I did cable crossovers, working up to a heavy weight. Then I dropped the weight several times and got a good pump. That's all I did for chest. But I knew that was all I was going to do for chest. So I had to make it count. And I really think that maybe the less volume, but the making it count more is where this growth is coming from. So if you're into this, and you're going to improve your health and be a stronger human being, more is not always better when it comes to just pure weightlifting. If you want to do more general fitness training. You don't get wrecked as hard when you do that. So just keep that in mind, guys, and I will talk to y'all next time.